I realize your blood sugar may be somewhat low, but the capstone presentation of this first morning of Gaining Ground allows me to introduce one of my favorite people. In the mid-1990s, I traveled through several countries in Asia with Sarah Severn on behalf of Nike. And it's been really quite breathtaking for me to watch the evolution of Nike since that time, because really the evolution is that of so many organizations, and the evolution is one that lies ahead of so many organizations as they shift a focus from dealing with the minutiae of point source pollution and so on to truly understanding what a renewed business ethos around sustainability might look like. It is a real delight for me to share with you Sarah Severn, the director of Horizons for Nike, who's going to share with you some ideas around business and the one planet economy. Please join me in welcoming Sarah Severn.
Yeah, I realize I'm the only thing standing between you and lunch, which is never a good thing. So I just wanted to set a little bit of context. Thanks. First, thanking Jean and Rob for inviting me to this. The last time I did this was in May, actually, in Calgary, in the belly of the beast, so to speak. So I feel like I'm kind of in a really friendly and welcoming environment here. And obviously my remarks, there's a lot that you already know, so I'm going to skip through the first few slides quite quickly, but I did want to set some context. The other thing is to say I'm clearly a British citizen, but I'm living, which gives me a European sensibility. You know, I still do things like hang my laundry outside. I'm living in Portland, which is largely regarded to be ecotopia, apart from the job situation. But I work for a multinational company, and that really is the biggest challenge on the sustainability front. And I was reflecting on what Paul said this morning about how working at a national and an international level is very, very difficult and challenging, and how really only working at the city level is where we're going to see direct change. And I do accept that fact, but I also think we can't give up on the national piece and the multinational piece, and so that's what I'm going to talk about. So this funnel is from the Natural Step framework, and it really demonstrates what we've talked about earlier this morning, this idea of declining natural systems and increasing population, creating this funnel effect that we're now actually living in. And when I first saw this back in 1995, all the signs were there for this, but people didn't seem to be paying attention. And it was a very hard thing, especially working inside a multinational company, to get people to pay attention to this. I think that's really changed now, because the system pressures are showing up. They're showing up in things like oil prices. They're showing up in water scarcity. They're certainly showing up with climate change that we're seeing happening right in front of our eyes. But the other thing that's changed in that time is also our ability to connect with each other around the world and actually see firsthand what's happening. And if you think back to 1995, the web was still fairly new and Google didn't even exist. So our lives have changed. Now, I can go in on the internet and get facts up on any issue that I want to look at very, very quickly, and it took a lot longer back then. So what does a business like Nike care about? The first of these things, you know, that we talked about, there's three things I'll talk very briefly about, but peak oil, that's already been talked about in some length. So the key issues, I think, are ones that you all very well understand, that our discoveries are not what they were, and production is exceeding that. The fact that for every barrel that we find, we use 3 to 6 barrels, this clearly is not sustainable. And in a nutshell, you know, demand is much higher than supply. And so really for a company, what that means is we have to reimagine what we use as materials. And Nike is predicated, the business model is predicated on oil, everything that we use. And we have to find new materials. And right now, one of my colleagues is actually at a conference on the other side of North America, actually in Maine, a conference called PopTech, where they're trying to initiate a call to try and find a new material that we'll be able to use in a closed-loop fashion. So the issue of water. For a company like Nike, you're talking about water usage that is really embedded in the materials we use. So take cotton, for example. 2,700 litres of water go into making one cotton T-shirt. And that primarily comes from the agriculture. So about 80% of that is from the agriculture itself, and the rest of it comes in dyeing and finishing. So clearly we need to do a lot. We have to face that as a challenge because per capita use has gone up. We have more people, a higher population coming in, and we still have the same amount of water, fresh water on this planet that we started with. It's just been moved around in terms of availability. And then the third thing for us is the issue of climate change, where I'm really convinced that we have the technical solutions for climate change. I really do believe that from everything I've seen. But what we lack is the political and the moral will to swiftly and decisively end our dependence on fossil fuels. Now, I'm going to talk about what we, Nike, are doing to try and push that agenda as hard as we can. I was disappointed to hear about the views on Copenhagen. I still think we have a chance there. In terms of the global footprint, Mayor Robertson actually referred to this earlier, and this is what it all adds up to. This is the notion that you have really a capacity, a biocapacity for the planet that we are currently exceeding. And we're exceeding it each year. We eat away at more and more of our capital, and the rate at which we get to that point moves slowly up the calendar. And if you break this down by country, I think the mayor mentioned that Canada has something like a four-planet consumption level. Well, the United States has a six-planet consumption level, and clearly that's not sustainable. So, again, the question we ask ourselves as a business is how do we get to kind of one-planet business? How can we continue to grow financially but with much diminished throughput of resources? So what we've got all together now is this notion of hitting the walls of the funnel, and we have all this constraint, and it's showing up as volatility. It's not a straight path, and we have to, you know, use feats of imagination to envision ourselves at the end of that funnel in a sustainable future. Meanwhile, we have all these natural, economic, social, and human systems that are totally interdependent, and the feedback loops are there, and some of these feedback loops we just don't understand. So I think we're very much in mind of trying to adopt this precautionary principle moving forward. We certainly can't wait until it's too late on the climate change agenda. Bob Johansson of the Institute for the Future talks about this as a VUCA world, which is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And it requires a different style of leadership. And in particular, we have to consider that these aren't just simple problems to which we can find solutions, but rather what we're facing is dilemmas, a series of dilemmas. And to solve those dilemmas, we have to have new ways of thinking, new ways of being, and really, above all, a very new intention of what we want for our future. So with that, I'm going to talk about a few of the things that I think are really going to make a difference for us as a business. And these are, one, our innovation agenda around product and what we're doing there to try and close the loop. And this is very much, obviously, the heart of our business. The second is to talk about partnership and collaboration, our work on climate change and our advocacy agenda. And then the third area is something called the Green Exchange, which is really collaboration, a vision of collaboration on a massive scale that I'm hoping we're going to be able to get the cities to participate in. So consider design. Innovation is really a core value of Nike, and one of the things that we talked about was how do we combine this notion of innovation with the concept of sustainability? And for us, really, it started with design. And we had, back in 97, Bill McDonough came in to Nike. And it was around the same time, probably a year or two before that, we'd had Paul come in and really get us energized around the sustainability agenda. But Bill was the first one to say, actually, you need to start it with design. And you need to think about design being the first signal of intention. So we began by measuring our environmental footprint. And we focused the work on the product side on four key areas, which are waste, water, energy, and toxics. So that's what those symbols stand for. And we actually use an index, a scoring system, that allows our designers to be able to predict when they're going into the design phase what the outcome is going to be once a finished shoe or piece of apparel is put in place. And so that system helps them use fewer toxics, create less waste, choose what we call environmentally preferred materials, and there's a whole protocol behind that. And also then we have one piece of the index which refers to innovation. So they come up with some new innovative process. They get marks for that. And the plan is to make that broadly available to our industry and share it beyond. So in Portland, for instance, as has already been said, you know, we have a number of our competitors there, but we're working across the industry to try and make this available. And I'll talk about that with the Green Exchange. So Considered isn't just a line. Considered is something that we want to see in every category. And we now have that. And by 2011, we have a goal to have every product coming out of Nike in footwear, to start with, should be at least at a base level of sustainability based on this index. But many of our products actually exceed that already. And, of course, we introduced a system around bronze, silver, and gold because we're a sports company. So that's how people are actually evaluated. And we only we'll only label the ones that reach silver or gold for the consumer to see, because those are the ones that we feel have the best story around them. So our ultimate goal, though, we recognize, is we can't just keep this sort of take, make, waste, or buy, build, bury, as it's also known. We have to try and come up with a closed-loop system, which is an enormous challenge for a company whose products are very widely dispersed, because you've got to be able to bring those products back. And just to give you an idea of the thinking behind that, I have a film, which I hope will show, which talks about the ethos behind this.
This is not a shoe. It's an ethos. A shoe that is reborn as a tennis court, or a basketball, or another shoe, a better shoe, a faster, lighter, stronger shoe. Can't still be called a shoe, can it? When a shoe runs its course, when it has surpassed its shelf life, when it has passed its prime and seen better days, when it has pushed us to greater goals, is that it? Is that the end? Why does it have to have a shelf life? Or for that matter, why does anything else? What if we remove the shelf? What if the cycle was a closed loop, where anything could become anything? A shoe into a shoe, or a shoe into a shirt. A shoe can't change the world, but an ethos can.
So that's where we're headed. And as I said, we've got lots of challenges in terms of the materials and the technologies and things that we need to use in that space. And we talk about closed loop as one of four wicked problems we have around our business model in terms of how we get to that much more sustainable company. So moving on to climate change, we've been working on this actually since 1995, largely because we had a global warming gas that was in our footwear. In the airbags, and any of you that have Nike shoes know that one of our core technologies is the airbags that provides the cushioning. And that's the true performance that's embedded in the shoe. And we discovered that the gas inside it, a gas called sulfur hexafluoride, was a global warming gas. Not only was it a global warming gas, it was 23,000 times more powerful than CO2 in terms of its warming effect. So we had to, we really had to address this. In 97, we set some targets around the phase out, and it proved to be pretty challenging. But, you know, we were doing all this at a time when there was still debate around the science, but we happened to believe in the science. And there was still no incentive for us. There wasn't a price on carbon. We were doing this with our own R&D and our own kind of efforts and money and investment. And so when I hear people say, it's too expensive, you can't do it, I say, well, you know, we managed to do it. This was our core technology. And we did. It was tens of millions of dollars. But what happens is you innovate in the process. And we were at a time where the patents for that air technology were actually due to expire. So we needed to do some level of innovation. And they actually came up with an innovation that resulted in being able to encapsulate nitrogen, which meant we had to have a change in the actual film itself that encapsulates that nitrogen. So that really, along the way, we work with the World Wildlife Fund, and we set some targets for our own operations with energy efficiency projects and the adoption of renewable energy. And so with that, we've done the sorts of things that are probably very common here in Vancouver. You know, we've put energy efficiency into existing buildings. We've done new buildings. We did one in Europe, which was built to be highly energy efficient. We have renewable energy where we can put it in place. And in fact, in one of our distribution centers in Belgium, we have windmills on site because we came up with an agreement between the local utility. They wanted the land. There's plenty of wind at the site. And now every time our CEO goes over there, he comes back saying, I want windmills on the campus. Well, we don't have a lot of wind at our campus, but we have got solar. So we've put some solar installations there. And we've done all of this without a price on carbon. And with a good price on carbon, there's much more that could be accessible both to us and to other businesses out there. So looking at that, though, if you actually look at the what we influence versus what we own, that's what we influence. And the energy used in materials is actually where the highest impact is. So there's a lot that we need to do around the choice of materials that goes into our products. But more than that, we felt that we had a role to play in the advocacy agenda around climate change. And there's some good reasons for that. This is about 18 months ago, we started to work on the idea of setting up a business coalition to work for climate change legislation, the passage of climate change legislation in the United States. And this was prior to the presidential election, so we didn't know what kind of a regime we were going to be faced with. And I think in November, round about the time of the election, actually, the group was formed. And the founding partners for this group, BICEP, which stands for Business for Innovative Climate and Energy Policy, the founding groups included Levi's, Starbucks, Sun Microsystems, and Timberland. And since then, we're up now to about 15 companies, including companies like eBay, The Gap, North Face, Cliff Bar, Aspen Ski, largely consumer-facing companies. We felt the voice of the consumer wasn't being heard in this debate. A lot of the voices in Washington were coming from the fossil fuel industry and from large emitters, and we felt that there was a role for companies such as ourselves to put forward their point of view. And if you look at it from a business case for Nike, there are three key things that we really care about. One is that we have global supply chains that are very vulnerable to the impacts of climate change, as are the communities where we do business. The second thing is that we have a young consumer, and they're passionate about this issue, and they're also the generation that's going to be the most impacted by whatever legacy we leave them. And the third is just, you know, our interest in innovation. We see this as a huge opportunity for innovation, and we're behind every effort that goes with that. And we want to see that innovation unleashed by having a price on carbon. So the principles, BICEP set up a series of principles that we said needed to be part of any legislation. And it includes really tough targets between 25 to 40% reduction over 1990 levels. And it's like, who forgot about 1990? Somebody said that to me today. Everybody's talking about 2005 and 2007 as a baseline. The science is telling us we have to start with 1990. There are other aspects of this. We talk about cap and trade, but we want 100% auction of allowances and an emphasis on renewables and energy efficiency, and in particular, green jobs. So Focus the Nation is a youth-based organization that we're also working with, which is helping bring the voice of youth together with legislators around the country in the United States to really get their voices heard. And we think we're having an impact. So, and this is one area where I think companies can really participate. So the final piece that I wanted to talk about is green exchange. And I was sitting thinking about this, and it takes a little bit of explanation, but I do think there's an opportunity here for the cities and the city agenda to participate in this. This all started because we were going around, in particular one of my colleagues was going to meeting after meeting and conferences like this where everybody's sharing their, you know, what they're doing. And she said, you know, we're all doing carbon footprinting. And we're all looking for ways to dye clothes without water, for example. Or we're all trying to seek these things. And she said, we've got no way to share what we're doing. And the only people getting rich on the back of this are the consultants. So apologies to all the consultants out there, but, you know, how many people have gone through their carbon footprint? You know, it's the same process, but we should all be able to do that intuitively. So that was the first thing. Then we said, so lots of duplicated effort, no way to share. And then secondly, look at the state of the planet. Go back to that global footprint slide. We're clearly, the work that we're doing is incremental. It's not getting us to a place that we need to be as rapidly as we need to get there. So how do we accelerate that? How do we really shift whole systems? So we started talking about a place where we could, you know, how could we create this space where we could exchange know-how primarily? And we got together with Creative Commons. And Creative Commons has done a lot of work in the area of copyright and license and how people share their artwork or their music or their photography in ways that enable them to keep the integrity of that, but they can share, people can improve on it, share it back, they can create various types of license, and it protects the integrity of their original work. And it also allows people to track and see who's using. And we said, well, wouldn't it be great if you could do that with patents? So the first stage of green exchange is to be able to take patents that we have in the company that we think could have some use for sustainability, put them into the green exchange with certain licensing conditions, and those range from everything like, this is free, take it and use it, particularly for academic research, to this is free, but there are some conditions attached. We want to know what you do with it. We want to know what benefits and could you share it back, to even the point where you say, well, I'm happy for anyone to use this patent outside of my industry, but there'll be a price for it. So you could exclude your direct competitor if you needed to, but you would be able to share that IP and that patent much more broadly. And we think this is incredibly important in the area of climate change, where we need vast and speedy technology transfer to happen for the developing countries. And so this would be one way to facilitate that. So we set about looking for some partners, some founding partners, who would bring new ideas and their own creativity, this process. And the partners we have are Best Buy, Mountain Equipment Co-op, which is a Canadian company, the Outdoor Industry Association, and Engenera, who are also another Canadian company that are helping a lot with the software. That Don Tapscott's the author of Wikonomics, if some of you are familiar with that book. He's a huge fan of open source, and this is very much about open source. Salesforce.com, Yahoo, IDEO, the design firm. And as I reflected on this list, I thought, well, we don't have any cities in there yet. And actually, as we look at founding partners, what we really want is people to bring in their creativity. It's less about bringing money. We do have funding already set up. But more than that, we're going to need participants. So Green Exchange is going to go live after January. It's going to be launched at Davos. And we're trying to build some case studies and some ideas around what happens when you put IP into a space and you create this licensing model. We'll start with patents. We'll move on to know-how. And we need people to participate. And I thought about all the discussions here today, all the great things that Portland, the city of Portland, the city of Vancouver are doing. And wouldn't it be wonderful if you could just share that knowledge in a really simple, straightforward way, and you had a place that you could go to, and you could also see who was using it and what the benefits were. All the things that we've looked at up to date out there, all that happens is you put your patent out there and then you don't know what's happened to it. So there's no kind of growth, there's no accumulation of knowledge. So we have really, really ambitious plans for this, and would love to see people participate in it. So in closing, and I think I've actually brought us back into almost to the right timing, I would definitely encourage those of you in business to really stand up and be counted on this climate change agenda, because it's more important than ever. And those of you, particularly any of the businesses that are here in the US, you need to get out of the conference rooms and into the offices of your legislators. And that goes for Canada too. So, you know, my view is we kind of only have one go at this. And it's no point Vancouver and Portland being oases of sustainability if the rest of the planet is kind of falling apart. So I really do say, you know, get out there, get your voices heard, and it makes a difference. We have been just blown away by the number of politicians who have said to us, we really didn't understand this before you came in to talk to it. We had no idea that there was a business case around climate change for companies like yours, that there was a business case for taking action, I should say, on climate change. And so don't believe for a minute that your voice doesn't count. It really does. So with that, I will say onward to lunch. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you want to grab me as I move out to lunch. Okay, thanks.